Hello, everyone. My name is David Smith, and this is the Armchair Commentary. On this week's episode, I'm joined by one of my friends at Blue Jays Dad from the Blue Jays Dad podcast, Try Easier. We talk robot umpires, baseball sci-fi movies, Vlad Guerrero Jr., and what the Jays are going to do, plus the role of a manager. If you're not already subscribed to the podcast, please make sure to hit that sub button. Make sure to do me a favor. Check out Try Easier. It's the Blue Jays Dad podcast. Excellent podcast. And you definitely don't want to miss it. So you can find his podcast wherever you get your podcast. If you're looking for merch or you want to support this podcast, you can head over to youtube.com, search up Armchair Commentary, or you can head over to patreon.com / Armchair Commentary, redbubble.com, search Armchair Commentary, where you can watch our videos, subscribe to our channels, buy our merch, or support this podcast. So without further ado, fire Charlie. We're back again with one of my favorite guests, a longtime friend of the show, a huge supporter of all things Blue Jays, Mr. Blue Jays Dad. Welcome back. It's been far too long since we've had you on.
Well, totally. But thank you for having me. It's been a crazy year, a year plus, hasn't it?
Where, yeah.
Just the other day, 2 days ago, I sat down in a Starbucks in my natural habitat for the first time in months and months. Even the manager of the Starbucks delivered my water from the pickup counter to right. my table just to welcome me back. I'm like, isn't this weird that everything, she's like, you're still here. And I'm like, yeah, isn't it weird? You know, everything's back to normal. Not everything, but a lot of things are here in Minnesota.
You've just picked back up right where you left off. And that's important. I think it's good to see you back in your natural habitat, as mentioned. Not a sponsor of the show, but if you feel like it's Starbucks, let us know. You've been busy and producing your own bit of material. Do you want to let the people know early on, and we'll of course post the links to everything in the past, but what have you been up to?
On the podcast front, I have a Blue Jays Dad podcast that I call Try Easier. I just ripped that off from Pat Tabler, one of the Blue Jays broadcasters, that when a guy's scuffling and trying too hard, he says to try easier. It's kind of my own biography as well. My own life story is that I just need to learn to try easier. So it's more of a name for myself and something funny that I can laugh at, where other people might be like, why do you call it that? But that's just my thing. It's been great. As I was telling you earlier before we went on, I was able to get some simple equipment that makes recording a lot easier for me, which, I found my first try at it last year. It just became too much work with editing, things like that. So I do it. I self-produce on the fly, all that stuff. And so that's great. And I found a rhythm. Like I know, like David, you've been an inspiration to me, how really success in podcasting, I think, is consistency, is that you do it. You just do it. And I remember you telling me that. And that's actually, it's on that, teleprompter
yeah.
in my mind,
yeah.
where it's, hey, I remember what David said. I gotta find something that I can stick with and not give up. And so my strategy right now has been do a podcast with a guest that previews the upcoming Blue Jays series. So a guest from another team. And then it saves me time. I don't got to research. I don't really have to know anything. And I get to ask questions of the other person. And then I make a friend. And I say that I feel like I have a whole batch of new friends now that are slowly all over the USA. And I just love it. And so it's great. I'm having a blast.
We'll make sure to link up Blue Jays Dad podcast, of course, in both our YouTube and in the audio version.
Awesome.
It wouldn't be proper to have you back without talking at least some Blue Jays. And I want to get there. But first, what have you been thinking about the season as a whole for all of baseball? Is there anything that outside of Jayland that has caught your attention
Josh Donaldson scored the 2 millionth run or whatever it was in Jays history or in Major League Baseball history. Sorry. And, you know, we've had the Padres Dodgers rivalry going early on. Is there anything across baseball outside of Jayland that has kind of caught your attention?
Yeah, well, I guess obviously the decrease in offensive production, and it's really fun to be the fan of a team that is not suffering that.
Yeah,
most and to watch everything else going on. I think like in previous years, but as technology catches up and as more people are on technology, I think it's making it really hard to be a major league umpire these days. And there's one account, maybe you could throw it in the show notes too. I forget what it's called, but it's like umpire tracking something where it's an account that hours after the game puts together a real simple infographic that shows you the missed calls and everything like that. But could you imagine being an umpire these days? Like,
I think they
can get away with way less. And I think it's like the rest of society right now. We're all catching up to living in a world that's connected. We're not just in our corners anymore. And that's making it difficult on a number of levels. And it's challenging to us human beings. I say umpires are a great example of that, to where they used to be able to get away with, oh, felt like a strike, or this would be a good time to rip a strike three, and then you see, no, that was 5.5 inches off the plate. That's not a strike. So that's catching my eye. And I think for a long time I thought, no, umpires should always be a part of the game. But now that we're getting right down to those graphics and the data that we can see everything at the end of what was on, what was off, if that stuff is truly accurate, if that's really what's happening and we got it right up there, then I say you got to go for it. You just got to let R2-D2 and C-3PO call the game.
It's so hard because umpiring is really baseball culture in a lot of ways. And baseball has always been very, very slow to adapt anything new. But when you look at umpiring in particular, and we've seen it numerous times. I mean, as Jays fans, everything from playoff runs to regular season games to, you know, Joe West missing calls to, I mean, why do I know umpire names? Why? Yeah. Why should I know an umpire's name? I shouldn't. Right. A truly good umpire shouldn't be someone. In hockey, they always say the best games are the ones where you don't notice the referees.
Right.
In baseball, I feel like if I notice the umpire a lot, if there are a lot, like everybody's human, you're going to miss a call. And I'm okay if there's a slider that's tailing out and they think that it may have crossed the plate on that, just nip the black on the corner and they call that strike, but it like, maybe it didn't. Okay. Yeah. That happens. But we're talking about like, God, I saw one the other day that looked like it was almost a half foot outside the zone.
Yeah.
The third strike. And I was like, you've got to be kidding me on that. Like, that's bad.
Go back and watch the Blue Jays postseason games from 92 and 93. There are some ridiculous strike calls and no one's complaining. Right. It's like Alomar just takes it. It's like 2 feet outside the zone, but it was more of the culture then. And I think now we're in the digital age where now we have the data to show, no, that was actually not a strike, nowhere near it. Now I will say this about, I forgot what I was going to say. I said, now I will say this, and then I totally forgot. It was something about umpires and something about, oh yeah. So I've done umpiring myself only up to the high school level.
Right.
And one of the things that they teach you, you know, the top umps that are in the system looking to make a career out of it. I was able to sit under a couple of these guys for a bit. And, you know, they talk about like new uniform ways to call things, you know, like back in the day, you had like maybe the Naked Gun, Leslie Nielsen thing where he's doing that, pointing, all that kind of stuff. Now they teach you, it's like hammer on the door or hammer on the wall, like strike one. And they want things very uniform now in that profession, but where you get to spice it up, and this is where umpires do come into the game. They want you to spice it up on a close, meaningful play. So right. If it's a bang, if it's not a close, like, that's why you see that happen. That's maybe why you know some umpires' names, is because
right. Of course
you want to see that, you know, the call at first, the guy, you know, it's a obvious play happens, ump kicks the dirt, then finally does a boom, you know, he's out, or
yeah,
a little punch like that. But when the close plays are, they're like, you know, they're doing like a whole dance. And I think that is meant to add to the game. Here's one other thing about being an ump, just in case you're ever in the stands and they're like, we need someone to umpire. Here's what you need to know. When you dust off home plate, mm-hmm. your butt should be facing the field, not the fans. Your butt faces the field, not the fans. And that's when I'm sitting there watching my son, who's now 15-year-old, play games. I know when an ump knows his stuff.
That's how you figure it out.
If I see his butt, it's like this guy has not been trained.
Yeah. I think it'll be interesting to see if it does go the way of kind of, I don't want to say auto, but like, I'm wondering if they start phasing in, you know, close game or critical game calls. I know they hate replay on safe out and fair foul, or, you know, the, like, did that go out or did it hit the top of the wall, or is it, you know, what are the rules of play for every, and every stadium's different. I mean, in Houston, the ballpark has plenty of nuance to it, right? Like there's yeah. weird juts and things are all over the place. And if it hits the wall, it may not necessarily be high enough for a home run. But I'm wondering if they eventually get to a system where they say, okay, you can appeal two third strike calls, or you can appeal two strike calls, you know, all game long. But if you're wrong, they're done. Like it's an out.
Right.
Like, I wonder if that's how they have to do it.
I don't know. I would love to see, like, what is it, Google Glasses
yeah.
come up, where it's like the ump is like, can just see the screen and he can see pitch tracker, and it's like, boom. And then he can give the signal, like yeah. a traditional signal to it, and just tell you what the data says in real time. Yeah. That's what I would prefer. And I can't believe I'm saying this, because just 5 years ago, I'd be like, no, umpires forever. The human error is a part of the game. Obviously on those close plays at bases, like a lot of times we've seen this, is that the umps have been accurate on very close plays. And then, but then often in replay reviews, they get it wrong, even when they have a clear camera angle. And I think here's one of the changes I would make. That replay review team needs to be live streamed. There should be an account, a website, a Twitter account that's just those guys sitting there all the time.
Yeah.
For the whole time, not just when they're making a call. We want to see they're accountable. We want to see they're playing, you know, sitting eating their fries and gravy in Canada. We don't want them to, you know, just be like, oh yeah, go look at that play, Angel, because we got our card game going on here.
Right.
I want to see these guys that they're tuned in and alert.
Right. I think that'd be interesting. I've also thought about, based on the world that we live in now, it would not be unsurprising if we got things like touch sensors on the bases. You know, I can see let's mm-hmm. imagine a world 10 to 15 years from now where your cleat has, or your glove has, an RFID type sensor, where whichever one touched first will rule you out or safe. And I can only, baseball purists right now are screaming at me, because I'm sure they don't want it, but it's going to come to a point where safe out at a bag is going to be determined by whether you were, you know, whether the sensor says you did it or not. And they're so sophisticated now, the sensors, that you can see that.
So what about, you know, we always debate on what the greatest baseball movie of all time is. And if you don't say Field of Dreams, you're wrong. But what about a sci-fi baseball movie where it's like envisioning what it's going to be like 20 years down the road? And you could even do like a whole kind of Back to the Future kind of spoof to it. And so it's like just all the these
kids,
things.
It's the kids from the Sandlot. And they go back in time and they play at the field, like they're living in the future, and they have to travel back to Earth, and they're going to play at the field where all of their parents played, and they have RFID like and everything. Yeah,
like something like that. And then I don't know, because I think we do need sci-fi genre for human society, right? We need to, even if it turns out to be ridiculous, we need to imagine those things of what could be. I think for baseball, that would make a fun baseball movie. And if anyone does it, I'm suing you if you don't give me the
he needs an executive producer credit here for sure.
I'll take a lifetime Starbucks.
Yeah. Turning our attention a little bit to the AL East in particular and the Toronto Blue Jays. How have you seen the season going so far? They're currently sitting in fourth place at 29-25. They've won a couple of games in a row, although one of them barely. But Baltimore is faltering. They're about exactly where I thought they'd be. The Yankees are starting to turn it on. The Red Sox, I think, are far improved and better than I thought they would be. And the Rays are doing Ray things, which is make everybody feel like you're a contender and then don't follow through with anything and trade everyone at the deadline.
Right. And they're just annoying.
The Rays are
annoying. Although I did have a podcast with a Rays podcaster, and it was the first Rays fan I've ever had a conversation with. So they do exist. There's probably
six. It's like 600 of them, I think.
And one with a cowbell. Yeah. One with a really loud cowbell. That wasn't him, though. No. Anyway, I'm just looking at the standings here. So you have every team is over 500 except for the Orioles. Yeah. I haven't checked this lately, but last week I know the Orioles had a winning record on the road, and they were like 6-18 at home, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Once again, but so Jays are 29-25, four games over 500, and they are in fourth place, five games back. Here's my thing. I think that the Jays should fire Charlie. No, I think they should extend Charlie. No, they should fire. Anyway, I think right now that's a focus for many fans. Myself is. You just see some of the losses they've had seem to be avoidable losses. Or I think one way I put it was the manager did not put his team in the best position to have a chance to hold the lead or to hold the tie game. And that's where I think managers do matter. Having said that, they're four games over 500. You're probably not going to get let go at that stage of the game. Yeah. Also, the new wave of managers, even though I don't think Montoyo is totally analytically based, like I don't think he's, you know, got the neural link in his brain that's hooked up to Atkins. But I do think that he's probably doing what he's told to do. And he's great for the young players. Like he's great to lay that foundation of entering the major leagues in this era. I think he's perfect for that. Just the question remains when it comes to that competitive edge that you need. And I want to just say this a lot, you know, John Gibbons gets a lot of hate, you know, that he made boneheaded moves, whatever that means. But I do think that we saw John Gibbons competitive edge and managerial style come alive when the Blue Jays were in the postseason. John Gibbons had a different gear. Remember when he took out R.A. Dickey and then brought in David Price, like in the fourth, was it the fourth inning with two outs? Like, and Dickey seemed, you know, he had that competitive nature himself. He didn't want to come out of the game. I don't know if those guys care about a pitcher win.
Yeah.
You know, after five innings in the postseason, but he brought in David Price, which effectively removed Price from being able to start the final game of the ALDS in 2015. But Gibby was like, now is the time. Now we're playing for the win. We're playing so we can play tomorrow. We're playing now so we can play tomorrow. And I think that that's where I haven't seen that from Charlie yet. And I just hope that there's that gear in there again.
Charlie has, there's a few things to unpack there. Charlie is definitely a lot, like everybody laughs at Gibby because he's laid back, you know, the old like big saunter out to the pitcher's mound, like it was a big chore to go relieve your guy. But Gibby would also be fired up. And I just haven't seen Charlie get angry And I don't know if I feel like some fans, twofold, have this desire to see your guy get really angry when something isn't going your way, and two, have a misunderstanding of what the manager's role truly is on a ball team. It's not necessarily about, you know, setting lineups is one thing, but I'm going to be honest, when you have the team that the Jays have, the position in which they hit isn't nearly as important as managing the bullpen, in my opinion. I think it's important. You don't want to put Vladdy in the nine spot, but, you know, like,
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm not going to sit here and criticize Montoya's lineup creation, because you know, he's only doing what he can with the guys that he's given from the front office. So that's not on him. But bullpen management is probably 90% of what I think a manager's job is. I think that that's where he's getting a bit of criticism, because Charlie wants to see his guys succeed, but he doesn't have the ability, it seems. And this is complete. I don't know Charlie Montoyo. I don't know him from Adam. I'm not going to sit here and say, well, yeah, I had a good conversation with him and he's a super sweet guy and he wants his guys to succeed. This is what I'm seeing, but it looks like he doesn't have that ability to say, I put you in this position and now I've got to take you out because you're not doing the job I asked you to do. He's like waiting for the guy to like get it. And if Chatwood comes in and he doesn't have it after two batters, you need to be able as a manager to go, he doesn't have it tonight. You can't go, just let him figure it out. Give him a minute. It'll be fine. You can't do that, because that's the game. That's the ball game, right? I think that's where, like, what do you see the manager's role as? Are you in agreement with me there that it's bullpen?
Yeah, I would say that it's putting whatever you can do to put your team in the best position to win. And so that's gonna be very subjective. I also think it includes the ability to stand up for your players and to stand up to your players. And those are two fundamental things about being a manager. And so if we're not seeing, the token getting tossed because you want to make a statement for your players.
Yeah.
And then the flip side is the, because I think, guys like Cito Gaston, John Gibbons, they also put out guys out there to give them a chance to redeem themselves or prove themselves. But I think you're right that especially that Chatwood appearance was very glaring because of what happened a week earlier and how he was throwing. It's like he was missing. Something was off. And so I think you do have to have the ability to confront players and stand up to them. I think the days of meeting your manager in the tunnel to the clubhouse and having a fist fight are probably over. That's all I'll say about that. Yeah. But it's sometimes, that confrontation is what is needed. But once again, we don't know what happens behind closed doors. Course, it's just that one game was super glaring that I think all of us saw it transpiring to the first few pitches. It's like, dude does not have it today.
Yeah.
And then, I forget who was commentating, Buck, Tabby, whoever it was, Shulman, everybody was saying, hey, there's nobody up. What's going on? So,
yeah, it was a pretty glaring error, unfortunately, which also means that everyone on planet Earth that's a Jays fan saw it. And of course, that had Twitter ablaze. But like you said, you're four games over 500. It would be an unprecedented firing. And I think that it would be hard to justify. Over one game's mismanagement, although I'm sure there likely was a conversation after the fact of, what do we need to do better in this situation? At least I hope there was, because it needs to be something that they have to approach better. If this team is going to win anything, if this team's going to compete, and I don't know if they're there yet, but they look like they have the pieces, and they've had flashes where they've looked utterly dominant, and then they've had other times where you're like, can't get out of the third inning without, without burning through three guys, it's pretty bad. So I think that they need to have that maybe internal. Maybe that's what they do. Maybe this is the thing that we don't know as fans, is that all of this stuff is happening internally and that we're just not seeing it.
Yeah. And I think that's leadership in any other aspect of life. Like, I really believe that unless people have been a leader, they don't get what leaders are and what leaders do.
Yeah.
Like people think, well, we have to be privy to all information. We have to be privy to all information, or we are privy to all information. No, when you're a leader, like, you are taking so much responsibility on yourself and your team. And a part of being a leader is that you don't divulge everything. You do deal with these things internally. And so what is really fun in the sports world is to guess about this stuff, because ultimately it's meaningless. Yes, Blue Jays dad just said that ultimately baseball is meaningless.
That's true. I want to get you out on this one last topic here. 2 years ago, Vlad Guerrero Jr. comes up to probably the most hype since Steven Strasburg came into the league. I remember, like, it was billed as must watch. This guy's going to, like, you know, win multiple Cy Youngs, and you got to, and of course he had some injuries and stuff, but the hype train was real with Vladdy. Watch this guy come up. He's going to hit everything a country mile. And he lived up to a lot of it, but not all of it. And then he had a bit of a, you know, down year, and people were thinking, I don't know, maybe he's a bust. And then of course there's a pandemic shortened weird season where there's not proper workouts, and he comes in a little overweight, and all of a sudden the critics are have completely jumped train from Vlad to Bo, which I also think, to be fair, Bo Bichette's an exceptional hitter and a great player. I have no issue with Bo, but I think that people may have gotten off the Vlad train a little quickly. And I think this season he's come back in. He's cut that extra weight that he had. He looks like he's ready to compete every at bat, and he looks really dangerous. So just want to get your thoughts on what you've seen from Vladdy and this transformation from, you know, hype train to Bustville to back on the, you know, in conversation for one of the best in the game, if not for Shohei Ohtani and Mike Trout doing other things.
Well, if my memory serves me correctly, which it often doesn't, I do believe that Vladdy came into camp before the season was delayed in 2020. He came into camp in better shape.
Yeah.
And like many of us, you know, a part of the COVID pandemic routine was staying at home and eating. I mean, I consumed bags of Trader Joe's orange chicken, and, you know, I'm still trying to right the ship after that. But so I get it. It's just a part of when our schedules, our routines are interrupted. And I think, you know, I just want to make this side point too. Like, I don't know about you, but I think for most of us at some point during the past 16 months, we've broke. There was a breaking point for each of us.
Yeah,
because absolutely. Life was so disrupted, and whether that came out on Twitter or our personal lives or whatever, you know. So, I mean, baseball, I'm just so happy that baseball happened last year. It looked pretty creepy when they first got the cardboard cutouts. Like, it looked like a baseball sci-fi movie where it's like, okay, yeah. Everybody in the world died except for baseball players. Here's what it looked like. I will say this about Vladdy, that it's, once again, it's why baseball is so amazing, is that you just get a different context of life to watch a hero's journey. You know, that's what it is. It's like
he's doing everything he has to do. And I think that a lot of people that are Jays fans are very happy to see this version of Vladdy, who looks quite good at first base, if I'm being honest. I know
you can see that, and you can see that right away. He's the guy that personality. He's a fun personality, and you can see that struggling at the plate, and maybe even more so at third base, was making baseball and not fun for him, at least from appearances. Yeah. But as soon as he got to first base, and I mean, even I, you know, I was criticizing him at the beginning of the season because, you know, things like his foot coming off the bag when he's stretching, you know, pretty fundamental stuff like that. But obviously, major league level, so you could just see that he was having fun for the first time as a major leaguer, and I just love that he does the split so often. Actually, my 15-year-old son, he's been playing a lot of first base when he doesn't pitch this year, and one night in the slick bases in a Bloomington rain one night, he did the splits. He jumped up, like did his, you know, his best vertical leap he could do.
Yeah.
Came down with the ball, landed back foot on the base, slipped, and did the full on Vlad splits. And wow. I was just a really proud Blue Jays dad at that point. But yeah, so I think Vlad is coming into his own. It's fun to watch. And I remember Pat Tabler said a couple weeks ago that he thought Bo Bichette was the better hitter. I'll just say this, you know, they're both great players and it's fun to watch the journey. And I think I'm going to just hope and guess and predict that they're going to have awesome major league careers that are going to make us proud Blue Jays fans for a long time.
Absolutely. Predictions on where they end the season? You think they're a wild card team? I mean, we're way early. I understand that as well.
No, I think it's a great question. I mean, I'm the usually optimistic. So I got to say, yeah. It's like,
yeah.
I'm just assuming they're going to. And I think it's going to be really fun to watch. And I don't know what improvements they're going to make. I really don't expect them to add midseason. I could be totally wrong, and that I would love to be wrong. I'm just not getting my hopes up that they're going to add. I just don't think this front office is the same personality and strategy of Alex Anthopoulos that made 2015 super fun. Someone just posted a picture of on Twitter. I forget who it was. Anyway, I think it was a 15-year-old pitcher, maybe. Anyway, but he posted the old Sports Illustrated magazine cover with like Gibby, Tulo, Double E, Josh Donaldson, Russell Martin, Jose Bautista, David Price, like all on there. He's like, how did this team ever lose? Well, what's funny is that once they had that team, they didn't lose very often. Their record from the end of July to the end of the season was phenomenal. It was, you look back on it and like, how did we even have a hope that they were going to make a run? And they did. But I think they, earlier that season, they spent a lot of time at 500, under over 500, and a lot of 10-run victories. And they just knew that, hey, if we get these guys a little bit of help. So I'm just not expecting that this time around. But I hope that they can do enough to make it work and get into the postseason and maybe see Charlie put it into a different gear.
I think that would be phenomenal to see. Where can the people get your podcast?
Wherever podcasts are available. I did a little survey on my Twitter and it looks like for the most part, people are on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And then you always have like some cool guy, a hipster that comes in and says, I get it from whatever, you know, some podcast that you've never heard of. But yeah, I think it's distributed everywhere. And I do have a YouTube channel that I never use, but once again, now you're inspiring me to actually follow through with that. But it's a whole nother thing where I don't always have a beautiful background like this. And I need to buy some LED strips to make my life look better than it is.
Absolutely. It's been super fun having you back on. And I hope we can do it again soon.
For sure. For sure. Yeah. Have a great weekend. And yeah. Thanks for having me. It's always fun. Always fun.
Thanks again.
And that does it for this week's episode of the Armchair Commentary. Don't forget to check out Try Easier, the Blue Jays Dad podcast. You're going to want to find him wherever you get your podcast, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Literally anywhere. Just ask him. It's there. Don't forget to follow at Blue Jays Dad on Twitter, where you can see him wax poetic about what's going on in the world of the Blue Jays or the world of sports. You definitely want to follow him. He's a must follow for any Blue Jays fan out there. If you're looking to support this podcast, you can head over to patreon.com/armchaircommentary. Or if you're looking to buy some merch, head over to redbubble.com. Check out Armchair Commentary. We have everything you could possibly want for merch. It has been an interesting week in the world of sports. Can't wait to do it again next week. Thanks for listening.